You are back with The Conversation, and today we're talking about our green energy future. And joining us to do that is Hawaiian Electric's Peter Rozeg and Shannon Tanganen from the Corporate Communications Department, along with Ulupono Initiative President Murray Clay, who's here to help put this in perspective as we navigate forward. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, you know, we're approaching a major juncture. Hawaiian Electric has put out this big solicitation to green energy producers. Peter, can you set the stage for our listeners? You have that AES coal plant out on the west side here on Oahu, and you have the Maui power plant that you're going to shut down soon, and we've got to replace that with something.
Absolutely. We have to replace those two plants, and we've been doing that gradually over the last few years. In 2018, we went out for the first phase of this effort. We got about 260 megawatts, this is statewide now, in eight projects. Now we're going to go out for 900 megawatts, more than three times that amount, on all the islands of renewable energy or storage or standalone storage. And we think that will complete the replacement we need for AES on Oahu, for Kahului on Maui. And if things don't come to pass, like PGV coming back or Huhonua coming into service on the Big Island, we will be able to maintain our position and more, our renewable energy momentum going into the future.
Right. I mean, we did have Puna Geo Venture Thermal plant there, which was inundated by lava, and that has still not come back online.
Yeah, it wasn't so much inundated. They lost some buildings and things like that, but it was surrounded by lava, and so they have been very good corporate citizens. I think they kept their people on staff and paid them, even though they weren't generating electricity. They've been flying in people by helicopter once a month or so to maintain it, and they are determined to bring it back. That is what we are looking forward to. There are a lot of hiccups along the way, potentially, but that will determine the amount of renewables that's needed for the Big Island, which is already the leader in renewables. But we're definitely closing Kahului Power Plant in the next few years. AES, which uses coal, is going to go out of service. So it's absolutely essential we have the generation and the storage, because we have to be able to take the electricity from the sun at the middle of the day and have it available from 5 to 9 p.m., which is really the peak of our demand here. So it's going to take both, and we're confident that if we get a good return on this solicitation, if we get most or all or most of what we're looking for, you know, we'll be covered for that, and we'll go beyond that. If we get everything, which, knock on wood, we hope to get everything, by about 2030, we would be at about 70% RPS, 70% of the electricity used by our customers would be from renewable sources, which is well ahead of our mandate. So then comes the hard part. Probably 70 to 100% is probably going to be even more challenging. But if we can get there, we will be so far ahead of everybody else and be in a much better place for Hawaii.
And Mary, how is Ulupono looking at this? Because you helped to jumpstart businesses, you know, that will move us toward our green energy goals. So what did you think when you saw the solicitation?
Yeah, so at Ulupono Initiative, one of our core missions is increasing renewable energy. So clearly we are delighted to see this happen. I mean, to put things in perspective, Peter said triple, but I think it's actually closer to quadruple, going from 250 to 900. So it's a huge increase, and it's such an unprecedented increase. I think it made national news several times. And to put things in perspective, and Peter shared some numbers with us, but that 900 megawatts alone, even if it was all solar, I mean, it'll probably be a mix of various assets, but that would be about 16.5 percentage points towards the RPS. Combine that with the request for proposals that was approved earlier this year, that's about 20 percentage points just with those two procurements alone. So I can't think of a time, certainly in the past, where we've made such a huge leap forward with just two procurements. So really excited to see that happen.
You know, we did talk with Jeff Michelina from the Blue Planet Foundation. You know, he lauded the proposal, you know, saying this is going to put us with the global leaders in reaching our, you know, green energy goals. Here's what he had to say. He's excited about this proposal and also about a new rate structure going forward.
In looking at how the utility is rewarded for the performance, not just for building new projects or, you know, selling electricity, but actually changing the structure so that the utility gets paid based on outcomes. based on how they are reducing customer bills or integrating more renewable energy or reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So that discussion is currently taking place at the Public Utilities Commission, and we should be seeing results of that over the next couple of years. But we think that's going to help with this transformation and really accelerate our progress towards 100% clean energy while we're lowering customer bills. We're excited about these large, low-cost renewable energy projects. We also want to leave the door open for residents and businesses to make their own investment in renewable energy on their rooftops or through community solar-type programs where they can invest in projects themselves. It's really important to have distributed energy resources on the grid to make sure our system is resilient. Hopefully, in the future, we'll see more microgrids in communities that can withstand the entire power grid going down, because they'll be able to produce and store their own electricity within their community. There are other values that come with having a distributed system where it's spread across the island and not reliant on single large, you know, sources of renewable energy. So there has to be a mix. And we hope that the utility stays open and leaves open that possibility for people to invest in their own renewable energy systems.
Can you talk about that, Peter? I mean, you know, microgrids and being able to kind of spread things around.
Sure. There are actually some microgrids in existence right now. We have Schofield Barracks Generating Station, which is on Army property up in central Oahu, run on biofuels and biodiesel. In an emergency, that can what we call island itself and keep Schofield Barracks and Hickam Airfield Wheeler Air Base in operation in an emergency, and that's where first responders are working and so forth. So we already are moving in that direction, and you know, Jeff is right, and Jeff's been, and Blue Planet and Ulupono have promoted that, and you know, we're very grateful for that, because from the beginning of this renewable energy effort, it's been clear Hawaiian Electric can't do it alone. It's got to be a community effort. Government, private sector, nonprofits have all got to be, pulling in the same direction, and we are. It's certainly people that wish we could go a little faster. We wish we could go a little faster, but we're going, I think, with this new solicitation, we're going faster than we thought we were going to be at this moment.
Okay, we have a call coming in. Art from Makiki, you have a question about solar systems?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, all right. You know, Hawaiian Electric has been reportedly making record profits, and yet it submitted this rate increase of 4.1%, which is like equivalent to $77 million. So what I'm seeing, and apparently this is tied into this green energy effort, which is, you know, laudable. But what I see is rates. I mean, we already are the highest rates in the country, three times the national average. And we have the highest cost of living, or among, you know, like the third highest. And I think electricity is one of the major causes of that. So can we expect more and more rate increases, which is going to increase the cost of living? So what is the Hawaiian Electric's plan to lower rates?
Thank you for that question. Shannon, you want to take this?
Our plan really is to stabilize rates. Renewable energy, we're able to have basically fixed costs. I mean, we can get, you know, 8 cents, you know, Peter, is it 8 cents, 10 cents, you know, per kilowatt hour. So what we're trying to do is stabilize costs. If you compare that with what it would cost with oil, you know, it would be much higher. So what we're trying to do is become energy independent. We're trying to lower costs, but it's also about stabilizing the costs.
Well, you folks just went in for a 4% ask, I think, with the at the Public Utilities Commission, a rate hike.
Mm-hmm.
What's that for?
It's to really strengthen our electric grid, integrate more renewable energy. All that, the technology behind it, you know, the construction of it, we need to be able to make improvements to our grid so that we can take in all this renewable energy. We've never had this in any time, you know, before. So we have this two-way flow of energy, and the grid was never intended to take that on.
It wasn't designed
for it. It wasn't designed for that.
Okay.
And, you know, the renewable energy is part of it, and as Shannon said, the resilience is also one of the reasons that we are spending quite a bit of money on upgrading the grid right now. You see what happened to the Bahamas, Puerto Rico, you know, the devastation that's being wrought in parts of the Southeast right now. We are in the hurricane zone, and we get hit, Big Island primarily, and Maui sometimes, but we get hit as well. And someday there's probably going to be a hit on Oahu that's fairly direct. So part of our spending is to replace wooden poles with steel poles, to make sure that our transmission boxes, our substations, can withstand the wind and withstand, in some cases, the water that comes. We just heard in the news about flooding. So that takes money. And there's no question that in the beginning of this process, as we add all this renewable energy and go to be a more resilient, hardened system, it's going to take money. And that there's no getting around that reality. We're glad to drive the price of generation down, and the more low-priced generation we can add, the better. And as Shannon said, you know, we hope to keep rates stable. We would love to lower them, but the reality is we know they'll be lower than they would be if we did not do the things we need to do. Because it's always cheaper to harden the system before you get a hit than have to try to pick up the pieces afterward.
Okay, so as you replace these two plants on Oahu and Maui, right, you're going to have to site them more inland, I would imagine.
Yes, definitely. We have to have our projects, all the renewable projects, outside of the tsunami zone, so the inundation zone.
And as far as the build out for those things, so you've got the RFP that just went out like 2 weeks ago. What's the timetable?
The timetable basically is we hope to begin negotiations with the projects that we think can go forward in about May of next year. So that would be, you know, they'll be finished over the few months after that. They'll go to the Public Utilities Commission. I hope that by the end, by mid-2020, about a year from now, we'll be able to say, as we do now about last year's effort, we'll be able to say we've got this number of projects, here's where they are, here's the, you know, whether they're wind or they're solar or they're, and they combine with storage or they're standalone storage. So there is a bit of a hurry because there are tax credits, federal tax credits, that are declining. And the more of these tax credits we can get, the cheaper we can get the renewables. So there's a good reason to move with alacrity. And I think the Public Utilities Commission knows that. They've been, I think, getting faster and getting more responsive to get these projects approved, and that's exactly what we need.
Okay, we have a call coming in from Honolulu. Roy, what's on your mind?
I've read some annual reports, current one in 2019, that HECO has made a $100 million profit. How can the users of electricity benefit from this net income that HECO made?
Who wants to take that?
Well, we're constantly reinvesting into our electric grid. So I would say since 2013, we've spent more than $1 billion replacing and upgrading equipment to improve our power grid, including the replacement of 7,100 poles, 5,800 transformers. So we're just constantly doing upgrades to our grid. We're, you know, trying to strengthen it, trying to be more resilient in preparation for whatever event could, you know, come our way.
And, you know, we all pay electric bills, so we are all, we all share the pain. We do have the highest rates per kilowatt hour in the nation, but if you look at how much the typical household spends, what we call the share of wallet, actually we're pretty low. We're about 45th in the nation because we do air condition, but we don't have to heat and so forth. And there are a lot of ways on an individual basis that anybody can reduce their electricity bills, their electricity use, without depriving themselves of air conditioning and hot water and television and cold beer and other essentials of life. So you can go online at Hawaiian Electric. You can talk to Hawaii Energy, which is an independent organization working for the PUC. We estimate today that if you get an electric vehicle, your total household energy bill will go down because you will spend zero for gasoline and maintenance of that vehicle, and you will spend a little more for electricity, or if you can get it off your roof, even better, even cheaper. So on an individual basis, there are many things all of us can do. Turning down the refrigerator a couple of degrees won't really impact the food in there, and it'll save an amazing amount. A new refrigerator that's Energy Star efficient. There are a lot of ways we can all save individually, and that contributes to getting to total green energy faster because we're needing less energy.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Our guests in our studio today, Ulupono Initiative President Marie Clay and Hawaiian Electric's Peter Razag and Shannon Tengonen. If you're just joining the conversation, you can join our discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. We have a call from Carl from Kapoho. What's on your mind?
Thank you for your show. Appreciate it. I'm just wondering, you want to move towards the green and the whole community moving together. As a community, I'd like to ask Kelco to pay the same amount for our solar electricity off our roofs that you charge us, instead of profiting off every solar installation that the private people make. And one other thing is, could you please make sure that it's not connected to the price of diesel?
Well, we've certainly disconnected from the price of diesel, and one of the reasons the Public Utilities Commission specifically said for Puna Geothermal Venture, they have a very old contract, which parts of which were attached to the price of oil, and we don't do that anymore. And the Public Utilities Commission said, renegotiate a new contract that reflects their legitimate costs and a legitimate profit for the company, not what it costs to provide that energy as if it were oil. So that's one thing that we are in total agreement on. We had for many years a program here where rooftop solar, if a customer sent energy back to the grid, they were compensated exactly what that energy costs. And that was called net metering, net energy metering. And the Public Utilities Commission ended that program basically because it was not a fair program. People who could afford to put solar on their roofs got away with a great deal, and people who could not ended up paying more of the costs than they should have. So the PUC ended that program. There still are a number of programs. They're called, they have, very complicated names, grid supply, self-supply, grid supply, smart export, and so forth, where a customer gets some compensation. But I don't think you'll ever see us go back to the day where a solar customer would send a kilowatt hour to the grid and got paid for it exactly what it costs. We were never making any money off of that. The energy can usually get used, but it was basically an unworkable situation as we got to 80,000 solar installations.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there an issue of stabilization of the grid?
That's a separate issue from the cost. But for sure, as we've moved to the highest level of rooftop solar in the country, 30% of homes on Oahu have rooftop solar. Nowhere else in the world will you find that. And as that happened, we had to do some innovation. We had to invent a new kind of what's called an inverter, the piece of equipment that connects your solar installation to the grid. And we had to invent some other processes because it did have an impact. 800 megawatts of solar, rooftop solar, that is kind of invisible to our system operators. They don't know when there's going to be more, when there's going to be less. They can't, in the instant, it's hard to control that. So we've had to do a lot and spend some money to make sure that those systems can operate without hurting everybody else on the grid. And that's absolutely true. It's different from the price question, but it's all part of being on what we, you know, we call the cutting edge or maybe the bleeding edge of the solar revolution. And other people look to us and say, you know, how do you deal with those incredible levels?
And we have a call coming in from Kailua. Lydia, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you so much. I do have a question about why is Kauai so able to be energy efficient versus Oahu? They're reaching great gains. And why can't we do that here? And while I was on hold, I listened to your response about solar energy. So you're saying that those of us that were socially conscious that went ahead to try and reduce energy costs are being penalized? Like, you're making it out to be we were taking advantage of a system.
Okay.
And that's not the case at all.
No, you were being smart and conscientious, and that's a great thing to do. We found as that program, that net energy metering program, grew, that at a much faster rate, very frankly, than anybody expected. Going back, if you want to get into the history of it, going back to the Fukushima earthquake and Japan closing their nuclear plants, and all of a sudden the price of oil went way high. And our, you know, they were using the same kind of oil as we are, and a lot of people got solar, and good on you. You know, no question that that was a wise thing to do. I think if you surveyed Hawaiian Electric employees, you'd find we have a higher percentage of people with solar than the general community, because it's a good deal. And we're not saying you did anything wrong. We're saying the system worked so that some people were disadvantaged, and those were people who didn't have a roof. And they were disadvantaged, and we need to correct that. But we're not taking away anything from anybody. If you have net metering today, you'll keep net metering for the, you know, forever, as far as we know. But if you come into the system today with a new solar system, you have to choose a different program that is still advantageous and still a great deal if you have a roof and can afford it, but is not as great a deal as you got. And many times, you know, first movers get the best deal. If you got one of the first Teslas, you probably paid less than you'd pay now. Maybe not.
I'm not in the Tesla market.
But you know, a lot of times first movers get the advantage of being first, and good for you. I don't want to take anything away from you. But, you know, nobody's being penalized, just that people coming in later are not going to get the deal that was available before.
Peter, talk about, you know, some of the tension that's out there, you know, that you're seeing as we try and move toward these, you know, noble green goals. But, you know, there are trade-offs. So what are you seeing out there?
You said Peter, but you looked at
me. I'm sorry. So Murray.
You do it, because it's really, I think you're in touch with the community feeling.
Yeah, so we're definitely, and we always have been, a fan of the net energy metering program, but it's important to remember that's an incentive program. So we knew from day one, I think everyone, I hope, knew from day one that giving someone the full value, and of course the value of electricity is not just the electrons themselves, but the cost of transmission and distribution, and that's a real cost, and giving that full value back to someone through net energy metering is basically, in effect, overpaying them for their electricity as an incentive to get them to take the risk of being an early adopter of solar. Because 5-10 years ago, solar was much more expensive than it is today. And so just as with EVs, as the example was given, other things, when a technology is new and it's more expensive, you need to give someone an incentive to adopt it. So net energy metering was an adoption sort of idea to get people to take that risk, to incur the higher cost, knowing that solar would probably be cheaper in the future, but you're going to incentivize them with something like net energy metering. And as with all incentives, as prices go down, as the technology becomes less risky, as it becomes more normal, if you will, the need for that incentive goes away. So it's not that anyone with energy metering is taking any unfair advantage. They took the early risk and they got compensated for it through net energy metering. And folks that are just now adopting solar, it's a lower price than it was before. They're taking less risk, and then it needs to be more of an economical rate that's paid to them. So even though we're very supportive of the program, all incentive programs almost by definition have to end at some point and has to go to a more normal economic kind of balance of payments.
And part of her question was, you know, what's Kauai doing right? You know, how is it that they're able to achieve their goals and some of the other islands are lagging behind? I don't know who wants to take that.
Kauai is doing a great job, and you know, they have certain resources available to them. They're about at the level of the Big Island, I'd say. So the Big Island, you know, where there's a lot of available land, for example, and places where they can put things without getting in the face of their citizens, and they have moved very aggressively, and we admire them, frankly. And here on Oahu, just to take the obvious example, we have the biggest population in the state. We have the biggest demand for electricity to run government, airports, banks, the whole hospitals, the whole routine. And we have very few places where you can hide a lot of renewable energy stuff. So the number of places for wind on this island, are probably with one exception, probably very close to being tapped out. We're going to see next week there'll be a blessing ceremony for a big solar installation in Mililani, and it's covering a lot of acres. And people are saying, oh, yeah, that's good, but I don't want to look at all those solar plants. And I'd ask Mary perhaps to weigh on this. The thing we have to have going forward with this 900 megawatts is community buy-in, is people not saying, not in my backyard, people saying, I'll take some if you'll take some. And that's going to be, you would ask about tensions, but that's going to be one of the big challenges. NIMBY, it's a small island. All of them are small islands, and people are right to be concerned by what's happening in their community, absolutely. But if we're going to get there, it means everybody's going to have to sacrifice a little.
Okay, we have another call on the line. Mark from Eva Beach. What's your question?
Hi, I had a question and a concern. My biggest question is, why is the CEO for Hawaiian Electric the single largest paid individual in the state of Hawaii, as far as I understand? And a lot of the callers, people are calling in, seem to misunderstand that this is a for-profit, zero-competition company that has us all in a vice grip. And so this idea that they have any incentive at all to lower rates or to keep rates stable is a joke. And I'm an early adopter of solar in my house too, and we were able to get the net metering in agreement. And when the guy said that, what he said about that, I nearly threw something at my speaker. I mean, this idea that they changed it and got the Public Utilities Commission to change it because they weren't making money, and this idea that it was somehow unfair is ridiculous. We sacrificed a lot to do the right thing environmentally for the planet to get electrical panels on our house. And this idea that, hey, they weren't making money off it, we need to fix this, that was insulting to everybody.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mark. Sorry. Peter?
Well, there you have a lot of things to unpack there. For the record, the executive you're talking about is not the president of Hawaiian Electric Company, but the president of HEI, which is a stockholding company, which includes Hawaiian Electric, American Savings Bank, and a number of other businesses. And her compensation is set by a board of directors, like everybody else's in that kind of a position. The president of Hawaiian Electric, who has a huge responsibility that he takes home with him every night, is well paid, but he's not the top executive in the state. So just to be clear about that, most of the HEI executive's compensation does not come from electric ratepayers directly. It comes from investments and other ways of compensation. So this is a person who has worked in this community from her birth and is very well established here, and is a good person. So the other thing I want to comment on is certainly Hawaiian Electric is, by some definitions, a monopoly. It is what's called a natural monopoly by economists. What that means is you don't want three or four or five electric companies putting poles and wires down streets and so forth. It's the same way as with the bus. You don't want five different public bus companies trying to get the route people in and out of Waikiki where the money is, and leaving the people on the North Shore, without any bus service. So the Public Utilities Commission regulates us very strictly, controls how much we can make, controls how much we can charge. And in return for that, we have what's called a franchise or a monopoly. We have to provide electricity to every single person that wants it at the same rate, whether we have to deliver it to the North Shore or deliver it to a house next door to one of our power plants. And there are different costs for that, but we charge the same, just the same as you get on the bus and you pay the same fare, whether you're going to the North Shore or you're going down the block. And that's what's called a natural monopoly. And to make up for the lack of direct competition, the Public Utilities Commission and the Consumer Advocate regulate us very carefully. You may not think they're doing a good enough job, but they're doing a hell of a good job in far as our estimation.
You don't get everything you want.
No, we don't.
We don't get everything.
What was the last rate case we went in for? We asked for 6 or 7% based on what we thought was a reasonable and provable case. We got 2 point something percent.
Okay.
So, we get turned down a lot more than most people realize.
Okay. Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Waimea Valley's Kalo and Awa Day, celebrating the culture and traditions of Kalo and Awa with workshops, live music, and more, Saturday, September 14th. More at waimeavalley.net.
I'm Ira Flato. This week on Science Friday, we ask, what is science, and is there a definition that includes the knowledge Native Americans and other indigenous peoples have been gathering for thousands of years? How to be more inclusive in our view of science, all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 1.
Share a little aloha this September. With Foodland's annual matching gift program, your donation is matched by Foodland and the Western Union Foundation. When you're at the register of a Foodland, Sac & Save, or Foodland Farm store anytime this September, remember Hawaii Public Radio and give aloha.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors, locations, Haleakala Waldorf School and Honolulu Waldorf School.
Okay, Murray, you're a numbers guy. You wanted to chime in on this issue of compensation.
Yes, I have the handicap of being a finance nerd to some extent. So I did want to point out there's several callers, as you noted, that have commented on how much money the utility has made. And I guess I just got to point out that if there's no profits, so if the utility made zero money, then there's no investment funds, there's no ability to raise debt, there's no ability to bring capital into Hawaii to whether it's replace poles or do new solar or change around transformers or something to allow for more customer-sided solar. You can't invest in, build, improve the grid without profits. No one would put money into a venture that's not going to make any money. So there has to be some profits. And as Peter noted, the Public Utilities Commission and especially the Consumer Advocate have a very strong role in making sure those profits are reasonable and not excessive. And as I think Peter pointed out, they don't get a lot of what they ask for. So there is checks and balances in the way the utility is regulated. But I feel like sometimes in Hawaii we get the opinion that for-profit is bad. But I would say that without profits, again, there is no capital, there is no improvement, there is no investment for the future, because who's going to invest if they can't make any money? So I just want to encourage the callers that are concerned about those profits that makes sense, but they do have the Public Utilities Commission and especially the consumer advocates that effectively have their backs on that subject.
And that said, though, we should acknowledge the big proposal to buy Hawaiian Electric by NextEra Energy. I mean, that was a big, I think, turning point, because, you know, we had a lot of eyes on what the utility does and where it needs to go forward in the future.
And I would also say, people always say, these days they're always asking, is Hawaii going to be another Puerto Rico? And what you had in Puerto Rico was a terrible storm. But what really hurt Puerto Rico was they had an electric company that was insolvent. They had an electric company that couldn't borrow any money to had been terribly financially managed for many, many years. And that's your worst case scenario, an electric company that can't borrow the money, that can't raise the funds, that can't do it, the basics that it needs to do. So a reasonable profit is what guarantees that, and good financial management, which I believe Hawaiian Electric has. So if you don't want to be another Puerto Rico, you've got to say we want a solvent, well-managed public utility regulated by PUC and the CA.
Okay. Murray?
Yeah, and we're touching back on the subject of resilience with Puerto Rico and Hurricane Dorian, and obviously hurricane season for Hawaii. And I guess that's one thing we haven't talked about yet on the resilience front, although, Peter, you mentioned, I think, briefly. Most of the oil plants that we have in Hawaii, I think on all the islands, are pretty darn close to the shore, probably within the tsunami zone or the storm surge that you would get off of a hurricane. And so when we replace those, like the Kahului plant and the AES coal plant, when we replace those with solar or wind or whatever it is, renewable, we're kind of getting a two-for-one deal. Because on one hand, we're replacing a fossil fuel with a renewable energy. But also, as far as I know, most, if not all, of those plants are much further inland than those oil plants. So you're actually adding not only renewables, but resiliency through these large procurements of renewables. And I think we don't want to miss on that subject.
Okay. We have a call coming in from Kalihi. Iris. What's your question?
My question is, what is HECO doing with Hawaiian Tel in regards to them hanging a very heavy Hawaiian Tel cable lines in tandem on the electrical poles? We have a serious problem in the Kalihi area near North School Street and Middle and Camp Forth Road at that major intersection, where we have several poles sagging. You know, with the rate increases, I would expect more from HECO in coordinating with Hawaiian Tel to get this repair done correctly by replacing the wooden poles that are sagging with solid metal ones that can hold the load, because this is an accident waiting to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you for that information. And I encourage you or anybody else that sees leaning poles, drooping wires that look really dangerous, to call Hawaiian Electric, report it, and we'll put it on the list of the many things we're doing. A few months ago, we took over the ownership of joint poles from Hawaiian Telcom. So we now do have that responsibility. And there are some poles that are still owned by them, and there's some poles owned by the city and county and so forth. But the overwhelming majority of poles are now owned by us. And we believe that will be a good thing in a number of ways, including getting these repairs done more quickly. In the past, different trucks would have to roll out to deal with different wires. Generally, the highest wires on a given pole are our wires, the Hawaiian Electric wires. The lower ones are telephone and cable. And the thick ones that you see, and maybe the ones you're talking about, are generally cable. But you don't care about that, do you? You care about the fact that they are sagging. So give us a call, and we will get to it as soon as we can, understanding that there are a lot of emergencies we have to deal with, and it probably won't happen tomorrow. But we'll have somebody look at it. They'll assess whether it is an emergency. And as we talked about earlier, in general, we're spending a lot of money to take out wooden poles, put in metal poles, because we don't want to have these poles blown over. We're training the metal poles not to jump in front of cars. You know, the wooden poles all think they can jump in front of cars. But, we are working toward a more resilient system as well as a safer system. So report these kinds of things to us.
Let's talk about the poles, because I've done a number of stories about the double and triple poles, and that was an issue, and I think that was part of what triggered, I think, this takeover of the pole ownership. But, you know, we're talking about the older neighborhoods, you know, the Kalihi, the Kaimuki, the, you know, Makiki, Pearl City. And these folks aren't asking for undergrounding. It's just they don't want to have to live with three poles for 8 years, you know. And I think what I was hearing is that, you know, probably Constance Lau and Alan Oshima don't have triple poles on their street. And so it's like, can you hurry up, please, and deal with this? Because, you know, you're asking for rate hikes. But I think folks in this community aren't asking for a lot. Just move them.
You're absolutely right. And one of the reasons we wanted to take over the ownership of the joint poles is so that we can, going forward, take care of those double and sometimes triple poles and some of the weird configurations. What has happened in the past is that we would go out and put in a new pole, change our wires over, and then wait for Hawaiian Telecom, which, as you know, has had some economic difficulties of their own over recent years. So it sometimes took a long time, and sometimes it seemed like a forever amount of time. So we are moving toward the situation where we will be able to do the whole job ourselves, and we will get rid of those poles. It will not happen overnight, but certainly we are aware of that. You know, Kalihi and that area has infrastructure problems across the board. They don't have enough sidewalks. Their roads are in bad shape. They've gotten, you know, it's an old neighborhood, as you say, and we're very aware of that. And I'm going to ask Alan Oshima whether he has double poles in front of his house. But, you know, the point is we know we're aware of it, and we're trying to fix it.
Okay, we have a call from Maui. Lloyd, you have a question about wind farms?
Yes, hello. You know, you guys sound great. You have the right answers. They sound good. They sound reasonable. But when you really look into the details, as previous callers have commented, this is a public utility making nothing but profit, and you justify your rate increases by saying that if you don't have a big profit, then you can't get investment. But let's look at a couple of things. One, 10 years ago in Maui, you guys came to the people and said, if we put a big wind farm up on that hill on public land, it's going to represent 13% of our energy needs. Have we seen any drop in our energy bills? No. There's a saying that liars figure and figures lie. And the fact of the matter is, you guys that are heading these corporations, these energy corporations, are making millions and millions of dollars if you look at what your salaries are over the years. I ask you one question. You talk about fairness. You talk about encouraging private citizens to do more. You have a GEMS program, GEMS, but do you know if you try to get in that GEMS program where you're paying for your solar on your house with your energy bill, there's a prohibition that you cannot store the energy. Now, can you explain that to us, how that fits into your public understanding?
Well, I can't, frankly. The GEMS program is run by the state government, and I've never heard that. I have heard that GEMS is kind of backlogged. They've got a lot of applications for funds. I've heard, and they need to have more people. Probably the state government needs to provide more people to process those. I've never heard that there's any kind of prohibition like that, and I'm going to check into it.
Murray, do you know anything about that?
I know that they don't have a lot of money left. I think there's somewhere, I wish I had the number in my head, I think it's between 20 and 30 million left in the GEMS program. And the biggest change that's been there lately is a positive one, that they've now worked out an on-bill financing program so that people can, instead of having this whole separate loan and everything, they just can finance that GEMS installation of solar on their house through their utility bill. So it's almost invisible, and there's sort of savings locked into that. So I just viewed it as a positive that now folks can do GEMS financing on bill and still have a lower power bill than they would have without that program.
Yeah, and the other thing to answer your previous question, we don't know what the price of electricity would be on Maui if we did not have Kahiawa Pastures, if we did not have the Oahe Wind Farm in East Maui. And that's always a very hard thing to understand. They're not as cheap as we'd like, but they would have been more expensive if we were still depending on oil on Maui. It would be more expensive than it is today. That's not much consolation when you pay your bill. We all know that because we all pay our bills. But that's the reality.
Okay. We have a question from Oahu. Michael, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. University of Hawaii, West Oahu, has a proposal out for a solar farm for 41 kilowatts, Mauka of H1. They wanted to have 80 kilowatts, but Hawaiian Electric would not let them do that because their grid would not support it. So how can you say you're in favor of this kind of a program when your system can't support it?
Well, exactly what I have been saying for most of this hour. We have to upgrade the grid. And until we do, we cannot necessarily accept all the power that's out there. Getting to 100% renewables has two basic parts. One is the generation and storage, which are things you could see or you notice. And the other is this grid that is, as Shannon said, is not designed, over 100 years was not designed for the two-way or multiple-way flow of electricity. So you are reinforcing my point, if you will, that in order to accept the energy, we have to upgrade the grid. We have to balance the energy. We still don't, you know, we still get a lot of power from that side of the island, and we'd rather spread it around a little bit. So there are a lot of factors that might have gone into that. But the PUC did just approve the solar farm for that area, and that's a great first step. Maybe there'll be more in the future. But until we have a grid that is able to accommodate all of this electricity, where it is, and it, you know, in the conditions it is, we simply, you know, we have to wait, and that's one of the reasons why we have to go at a rational pace.
So it's basically strengthening the backbone, I guess, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay. We have a call coming in from Kaneohe. Ann. Hi there, Ann. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Question?
Yes. No, I had a comment. I would like to compliment Peter. I'm not his wife or his daughter or his mother.
Okay.
Maybe we can make an arrangement.
He's very knowledgeable, and he's an excellent communicator. So I have a greater understanding after listening to him than I did prior to that. But the main reason for my
call—your check is in the mail. Thank you.
Is that electrical service is very personal, and in our neighborhood, we had an experience a year ago with—something exploded at a pole, and we were without power. And I just wanted to say that the crew came out at 9 o'clock on a very rainy Saturday night, put in temporary line. My line is underground. Eventually, it took a while, but my service was hardly ever interrupted. They had to do trenching. It was a large job. Everyone communicated wonderfully. The crew who were here could not have been nicer. By day two, they were calling me auntie. So I just think that we also need to stop and think about the wonderful service that Hawaiian Electric is providing. I'm not an employee. But I did read today that Hawaii, something probably we all know, has the highest cost of living proportionate to our income. I am not getting a 4% increase this year. Haven't had one for a long time. But I do think that the service is worth it, not just the power coming into my house, but the customer service and everything that Hawaiian Electric provides. So thank you for that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you. I would just want to say the real heroes in the company, I get to come on here and show off and talk a lot, but the real heroes in the company are those people that roll out in the trucks in the worst weather. Undergrounding is probably a little more enjoyable. Dealing with an underground system is a little more enjoyable in the rain than climbing up on poles, but they do that as well. They are, Shannon's making a face at me. So she's absolutely right. Climbing down in a manhole while it's raining and flooding is not exactly fun either. These people are incredibly dedicated, incredibly hardworking, and they are nice people, but I think they're nice people when nice people talk to them.
Okay.
And I think they called you auntie because you're a nice person. But they are the absolute heroes of our company, and I admire them so much.
Okay, we've only got about 3 minutes. Maybe a time for a quick question. Steve from the Big Island.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for being on the air today. Quick comment here. I live in an area where solar is really amazing, and it's called Hawaii. It's called Big Island of Hawaii, and we were without power several times. One of the last times we were without power for up to 7-8 days, I decided to go off grid. So I completely disconnected, went off grid, got a great system, been using it for about 10 years. It was about $15,000, a little pricey, but it taught us how to be less consumable, you know, to stop to consume so much energy. It also allowed us to be our own power company. And I was wondering if you would have any program in the near future to help encourage people to go off grid and go on batteries and maybe not, you know, maybe alleviate some of the pressure from what you guys are going through.
Well, we are increasingly encouraging people to get energy storage in their home, what we call behind the meter. We think most people would be better off still connected to the grid because when you make your own power, when you store your own power, you're really vulnerable to bad weather, to, you know, lack of wind or whatever you're making it. And we would rather see you be able to tap into our system when you need to do that. We understand the desire to go off the grid, but we really think the best situation would be if you were making your own power, storing your own power, and still connected to the grid for when you absolutely need us, and you help other people in that as well.
Okay, and we've got about a minute left. Murray, any final thoughts?
Just definitely applaud those few pioneers out there that are willing to take the plunge, as this caller just did, to go off grid. But we have seen that definitely most people do need the utility backup. And the microgrid services tariff is working on some of these issues. So a lot of that's in progress in terms of future programs that might come out to support that type of activity.
Okay. All right. We're just about out of time.
I really appreciate all the callers. You know, it's good to... We get calls directly, but it's always good to hear people voicing their concerns and even someone thanking us. So thank you very much for listening and calling.
And thank you, Ulupono Initiative President Marie Clay, Hawaiian Electric Peter Rozag, Shannon Tanganon with Corporate Communications. And if your call didn't make it on the line during the discussion, contact our talkback line, 808-792-8217. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday for more of the Conversation.